Penguin Random House presents The Mahabharata, Volume 2, Section 16 to 32. Translated by Bibek Debroy. Read by Sumit Kaul. Acknowledgements. Carving time out from one's regular schedule and work engagements to embark on such a mammoth work of translation has been difficult. The past tense should not be used, since only 20% of the road has yet been traversed. Sometimes, I wish I had been born in 19th century Bengal, with a benefactor funding me for doing nothing but this. But alas, the days of gentlemen of leisure are long over. The time could not be carved out from professional engagements, barring, of course, assorted television channels, who must have wondered why I have been so reluctant to head for their studios in the evenings. It was ascribed to health, interpreted as adverse health. It was certainly health, but not in an adverse sense. Reading the Mahabharata is good for one's mental health and is an activity to be recommended without any statutory warnings. The time was stolen in the evenings and over weekends. The cost was therefore borne by one's immediate family, and to a lesser extent, by friends. Socializing was reduced, since every dinner meant one less chapter done. The family has first claim on the debt, though I am sure it has claim over whatever merits are due. At least Suparna does, and these volumes are therefore dedicated to her. I suspect Sirius has no claim on the merits, though he has been remarkably patient at the times when he has been curled up near my feet and I have been translating away. There is some allegory there about a dog keeping company when the Mahabharata is being read and translated. Most people have thought I was mad, even if they never quite said that. Among those who believed and thought it was worthwhile, beyond immediate family, are M. Veerappa Moily, Ashok Desai, Pratap Bhanu Mehta, and Lavish Bhandari, and my sons, Nishanka and Vidroh. The various reviewers of the first volume have also been extremely kind. Incidentally, I wouldn't have been able to do it without Vaman Shivram Apte. When he compiled the Student's Sanskrit Dictionary more than 100 years ago in Pune, I am certain he had no idea that it would be used so comprehensively to translate the Mahabharata. Penguin also believed. My initial hesitation about being able to deliver was brushed aside by R. Sivapriya, who pushed me after the series had been commissioned by V. Karthika. And then Sumitra Srinivasan became the editor, followed by Paloma Datta. The enthusiasm of these ladies was so infectious that everything just snowballed, and Paloma ensured that the final product of the second volume was much more readable than what I had initially produced. When I first embarked on what was also a personal voyage of sorts, the end was never in sight and seemed to stretch to infinity. Now that 20% is over and 10% more is in the pipeline, the horizon can be seen. And all the people mentioned above have had a role to play in this journey. Introduction. The Hindu tradition has an amazingly large corpus of religious texts, spanning Vedas, Vedanta, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, Upanishads, Vedangas, Smritis, Puranas, Dharmashastras, and Itihas. For most of these texts, especially if one excludes classical Sanskrit literature, we don't quite know when they were composed and by whom. Not that one is looking for single authors. Some of the minor Puranas, Upa Purana, are of later vintage. For instance, the Bhavishya Purana, which is often listed as a major Purana or Mahapurana, mentions Queen Victoria. In the listing of the corpus above figures Itihasa, translated into English as history. History doesn't entirely capture the nuance of Itihasa, which is better translated as, this is indeed what happened. Itihasa isn't myth or fiction, It is a chronicle of what happened. It is fact. Or so runs the belief. And Itihasa consists of India's two major epics, the Ramayana and the Mahabharata. The former is believed to have been composed as poetry and the latter as prose. This isn't quite correct. The Ramayana has segments in prose and the Mahabharata has segments in poetry. Itihasa doesn't quite belong to the category of religious texts in the way that the Vedas and Vedanta are religious. However, the dividing line between what is religious and what is not is fuzzy. After all, Itihasa is also about attaining the objectives of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, and the Mahabharata includes Hinduism's most important spiritual text, the Bhagavad Gita. The epics are not part of the Shruti tradition. That tradition is like revelation without any composer. The epics are part of the Smriti tradition. At the time they were composed, there was no question of texts being written down. They were recited, heard, memorized, and passed down through the generations. But the Smriti tradition had composers. The Ramayana was composed by Valmiki, regarded as the first poet or kavi. The word kavi has a secondary meaning as poet or rhymer. The primary meaning of kavi is someone who is wise. And in that sense, the composer of the Mahabharata was no less wise. This was Veda Vyasa or Vyasa Deva. He was so named because he classified Vyasa, the Vedas. Veda Vyasa or Vyasa Deva isn't a proper name. It is a title. Once in a while, in accordance with the needs of the era, the Vedas need to be classified. Each such person obtains the title, and there have been 28 Vyasadevas so far. At one level, the question about who composed the Mahabharata is pointless. According to popular belief, and according to what the Mahabharata itself states, it was composed by Krishna Dvayapayana Vedavyasa, Vyasadeva. But the text was not composed and cast in stone at a single point in time. Multiple authors kept adding layers and embellishing it. Sections just kept getting added, and it is no one's suggestion that Krishna Dvayapayana Vedavyasa composed the text of the Mahabharata as it stands today. Consequently, the Mahabharata is far more unstructured than the Ramayana. The major sections of the Ramayana are known as kandas, and one meaning of the word kanda is the stem or trunk of a tree, suggesting solidity. The major sections of the Mahabharata are known as parvas, and while one meaning of the word parva is limb or member or joint, in its nuance there is greater fluidity in the word parva than in kanda. The Vyasadeva we are concerned with had a proper name of Krishna Dvayapayana. He was born on an island, Dvipa. That explains the Dvayapayana part of the name. He was dark. That explains the Krishna part of the name. It wasn't only the incarnation of Vishnu who had the name of Krishna. Krishna Dvayapayana Vedavyasa was also related to the protagonists of the Mahabharata story. To go back to the origins, the Ramayana is about the solar dynasty, while the Mahabharata is about the lunar dynasty. As is to be expected, the lunar dynasty begins with Soma, the moon, and goes down through Purarava, who married the famous Apsara Urvashi, Nahusha, and Yayati. Yayati became old, but wasn't ready to give up the pleasures of life. He asked his sons to temporarily loan him their youth. All but one refused. The ones who refused were cursed, that they would never be kings, and this included
Sample complete. Ready to continue?